Hi, everybody. Welcome back to what has long been a mostly defunct podcast. Not even sure what we called it. Something Meshek. Maybe we had a cute pun. I don't have to go look at the artwork, but the truth is that we started the podcast almost alongside the business, thinking that it'll be a great 1-2 punch of like launching Meshek 48 along with this podcast explaining what we were doing. But we forgot that when you launch something, it is so overwhelming and so exhausting that we didn't even have the time or energy or probably even the coherent thoughts to talk out what was going on as we were building out the Meshek. But it just happened to be that yesterday I was talking to Naomi Ross, who the author of The Giving Table, who we'll be doing an Instagram live with. And as she started talking, I just was so engaged in what she was saying that I made her stop talking, move from our dining room table to our office, and I started recording what she was talking about, what her process was, mostly because, I guess, two reasons. One, we've been thinking about podcasting or returning to podcasting for a while, so I guess somewhere in the far recesses of my mind it existed, and also what her philosophy is really bumps into nicely what our philosophy has been, which is that the world of food and the world of entertaining and the world of Judaism intersect in only the most beautiful of ways. And so what happened was a discussion about food and values and family and giving and chesed and tzedakah, charity, which was really inspiring to me. I so enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you will enjoy it too. So without further ado, welcome back to whatever this podcast was called, whatever episode this might be. We're glad. Okay, Naomi, I'm sitting with you over your cookbook, The Giving Table. And I realized as you're talking that all I really want to do is record you. So we're going to step back first and then keep talking. Just talk for like a second. What's the concept behind The Giving Table? Because it struck me as something so emotional.
It is definitely a heartfelt cookbook read, if there is such a thing. So The Giving Table is a themed cookbook. It is definitely your, you know, conventional in that it is has normal divided chapters, soups, fish, chicken, you know, whatever, that kind of thing, but with 160 recipes, which is great. And some really, really good, solid, well-tested recipes that I might add.
Well, one of the things, well, we've been talking about how to get you at the Meshek and what we would do together and how we're going to collaborate, and we're going to collaborate tomorrow on an Instagram live. But one of the big challenges was like, how do we get copies of the book into Israel? Because it's heavy.
It's a big
cookbook.
So the best, one of the best compliments I got about the book was that that it's like a textbook, but they said in a good way. Textbook. Not meaning like it's not bookish.
You might want to consider that as your tagline when you're printing this a second time.
Well, so basically in some ways it is like a textbook, in that there is a collection of not just the recipes, but of a lot of non-recipe content that is very, it's very much cumulative of everything that I've been working on over all the years of teaching, because I was first and foremost a cooking instructor.
And your career began as a cooking instructor?
Yes, but it started really as like a grassroots community service, because I was not with professional goals in mind. I was really just looking to help people in my community, like new young kalas who had no idea what they were doing in the kitchen and how to cook. And I was like, you know, I could put like a crash course together for you. I mean, I myself was really young and fairly newly married when I started doing it. And, you know, I was like married, what, a big, like 2 or 3 years. So I was like,
I
felt like, oh, like I know what I'm doing, because I already figured it out. But really it was just the beginning for me as well. And I've met these group of ladies commiserating in like the vestibule of my shul.
And they, where all good things begin.
Yeah. And they were miserably
underprepared.
Yes. Like they were, this one was married 6 weeks and this one was married like 3 months. And they're like, I don't know how to make dinner. I don't know how to make shabbos. I know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, you know, like, let's do something. And I worked really hard on putting like a little crash course together for them. And I was like lit on fire from it. Like I found my passion with it. And like many good things, it really took a life of its own. You know, one thing led to another, different experiences brought me to other experiences with teaching, with writing. I was always a strong writer. So when people started asking me to write food columns, I was like, sure, I like to write, you know. And then over the years, like, it became a craft that I honed. And
were you organized about it when you sat down to write this book? You told me it took about a year of your life.
It took a year about my of my life, but many of the recipes were already in development from all the years of teaching.
And you had them organized. I would say that's my big challenge when I'm like, oh wait, I have this recipe here and that recipe there, maybe.
Well, you know what, it's a thematic cookbook, right? I was about to tell you before, the theme of the cookbook, it's called The Giving Table because it's about the power of giving through the food that we create, and what we do with our food, how we give through our food. So in that way, I had gone through different ideas about how I was organizing this book. And my original idea, the organization looked quite different. Mm-hmm. And I actually, in order to really push and sell the book, I had to reconfigure how I was laying things out. So that's why I started by saying that the layout of the chapters is somewhat conventional, and, you know, so that it's more user-friendly and people can find
here are soups, here are appetizers.
That way they know and can easily find the things that they're looking for. But I also have a lot of cross-referencing. Like at the back, I have like many, many sample menus for different occasions, because I firmly believe that the type of food we choose to make is highly dependent on, you know, what's appropriate for that setting and that occasion. And so, you know, if you're entertaining for a crowd, well, that's an entirely different kind of cooking, and it's an entirely different menu you're serving than what you would cook for a Wednesday night supper, or even for a Shabbat supper sometimes, right? So, you know, big or small, or what the occasion is. My original way I organized the book was actually based on more situational, right?
Interesting.
And I ended up reconfiguring it and putting a lot of these ideas, rather than as chapters themselves, I ended up putting them as inserts in between the chapters to talk about the different avenues we have to give.
So one of the things that struck me that actually really speaks to me and resonates deeply is this idea that food is such a vehicle for chesed and such a vehicle for tzedakah. And we saw that at Papa Melech, and we're seeing it now in the Meshech, that it's not only about, I think for me, if I would like summarize my life or our values or mission plan or statement in the Meshech, like part of what I really want to be saying is like, the best things happen around your table. If it's your Shabbat table, your dining room table.
It's a facilitator. Like I've been, that is basically what I've been teaching for many years, is that yes, it's wonderful to make good food, and being, and all the skills and tips that I learned to give over as an instructor, I still give over, but it's more toward the end of you being organized such that you can enjoy what your end goal is. And your end goal is using food as a facilitator to accomplish something. And it can accomplish drawing people around the table, making it a more inviting setting for people to come to the table. You know, if I get takeout from a restaurant, it's still going to be delicious, but it doesn't draw people like, you know, grandma's, you know, old recipe for whatever, that people feel a connection to. People feel and smell the aromas, and they know that you worked hard on something, and it's something that's only coming from your hand.
So we talk a lot about memory in food. I think that there's such a strong connection. And sometimes you'll go back, like I left Toronto, I don't even know how many years ago, 20, 25 years ago, maybe even longer. And like you go back, and the things that you're eating, like I'm just eating it because of the memory of what it was when I was 10 or 11. It doesn't have the same.
There's almost like, I call it like a masorah that is passed down, not just by giving the recipe, but rather it's by associating the recipe. We do this on Pesach. I mean, pretty much like our tastes of Pesach are all food associations to give us the memory of what that holiday is.
I still sort of like intuitively grasp, like I look for the like Maxwell House Haggadah, because there's something about that. And it's true, like things that are, certainly I can't get them in Israel, but oh, my grandparents would come from Brooklyn to Toronto for Seder. And first of all, my Zaidi, Al Shalom, did not believe that the matzah was kosher enough in Toronto. So he would bring on the plane 5 kilos of matzah, because that was like, the kosher matzah comes from Brooklyn. But they would also bring like Barton's Seder mints.
Yes.
Do you remember those?
I remember all my grandfather used to come with Barton's chocolate covered matzah, a big thing of Barton's mixed chocolates.
Interesting. And we did the lollies, chocolate lollies.
So like our game, like when we were bored mid-Seder, you know, like we'd be like looking at the guide to the chocolates, like,
cause, oh,
you know,
which one, like, do you want to get?
Which one, what's inside each one, that kind of thing.
It is. There is that, I mean, it's beautiful, but I just for one second, I'm going to talk about the beauty of takeout. Maybe also because I live in Israel and there's takeout everywhere. But sometimes I feel like I would rather walk into Friday night dinner with takeout and everybody is calm and cool and collected than like being super frazzled.
I don't advocate not getting takeout, but I do advocate the power of home cooked food. Right.
Agreed. And the power of memory infused home cooked food.
And I think that people, there's always a balance. Like I have a lot of tips and hints in my last chapter of the book, which is a section on entertaining. And I put like a ton of non-recipe content in there in terms of lists and advice and, you know, checklists and things like that, because ultimately, instead of people enjoying the entertaining that they're doing, unfortunately they get so stressed out,
right?
That, absolutely. You know, that they can't enjoy it. And then it becomes like, they feel like they're just like a kitchen slave, and it's not, the goal really is to be able to enjoy the moment. Right. And there's different ways that, if you're more organized, if you're more set up for knowing how to handle it, well, then you can enjoy it. Right. Because then you can get it done in an easier way. You're not frazzled. You're not like stretched.
I'm going to shout out two people. One of the things that I think about in a Shabbat table or a Chag table definitely is Hidur Mitzvah, like making it beautiful, like really feeling the beauty of it. Your sister, Deborah, who is our connector, Deborah has that. Meaning when you sit at her Shabbat table, you understand that it is part of her meal concept is that it should be beautiful and that there should be all sorts of different things and interesting and creative, and you should just feel the beauty of it. I think she does that excellently. Another person is named Anat Bazak, who lives here on the Yishuv. We're sitting in Alon Shvud in my house. Thank you for hanging out with me today. Anat Bazak also is an event planner, but her whole business began when her children were little. And she, every Friday night, she set her table to the theme of Parshat HaShavua. And the kids started like looking forward to it. Well, what'd you pick? What'd you do? What an amazing approach to a table. Like just use it as a fully immersive experience. And I think part of that is in your cookbook, it's the recipes, which we're going to be trying out one tomorrow on your live at the Meshek. But part of what's happening in your cookbook is that you're saying, let me just give you the immersive experience also. Let me just, from start to finish, let me talk about why I have this value and where we see it in.
I think that the recipes are important in cookbooks, but you know, you can get a lot of free recipes online. You can get them even on my website. I'm giving out free recipes, right? But ultimately, what I really wanted for the cookbook was for it to be a more holistic experience of understanding not just the what and the why, but also the how and what's behind it. And you know, I've become accepting of the fact that my ideology is not necessarily the most popular, right? To, you know, what you expect me to cook it and to actually have intention and meaning and feeling behind what I'm doing. And now that's a tall order, right?
Right.
Now you're expecting a lot. Like, you know, isn't it enough that I got the food on the table? But ultimately, like what I really hope for people is that they're enjoying and having self-esteem and pride in the entire process from start to finish, right? That it's not only just about the end product. Yes, ultimately it is, in that you want to get it on the table and you want to feed people, but that if you have the understanding of what you're accomplishing in mind beforehand, then when you're doing work, you're like, oh, but what I'm doing is important. You know what I'm saying?
I think the word would be nourishing, because it's not only a physical nourishment. There's more there.
And there's different, like, there's, yes, I mean, we were talking beforehand about, you know, opportunities for chesed cooking, which I cover in the book, you know, extensively, whether it's Shiva or cooking for a family that had a new baby or cooking for guests that come, but also for your own family. Like we tend to think, oh, well, it's just my family. So like, you know,
You are talking to the queen of, I do that all the time, because when we had Pat Bamelech, so we were working 6 days a week, you were coming home Friday, a few hours before Shabbat, and this kid made this and this kid made that and the other kid set the table and it was so frazzled. And you were like, oh, I can't cook for you. I've just spent my time cooking for everybody else or baking for everybody else. And that we sort of had to switch up that narrative and say like, oh, we do that there. And also here, like, I didn't want to bring the bakery food home necessarily. I wanted to be like, no, this is Kodesh, you know?
So I had that myself. I mean, I think it's a really hard balance when you're in the food business. To be able to balance that is really hard because you only have, like, you don't have an infinite well of cooking energy, right? So who gets it? Who gets your cooking energy? But I did find, even for myself, I used to do some seasonal private chef work. For years, I had like a private cadre of clientele. And
not anymore.
Once I stopped doing it, I had gotten a job working for a place called Apron Masters Kitchen in Woodmere, which is a recreational cooking space. And I became there when they opened. I helped them open, and I was their culinary director for 2 years.
That's awesome.
And it was actually very similar to the Meshek in that it was like private groups that would come, and we'd run events and parties, and I taught tons and tons of classes there. But I was working so much for them that once I took that job, I was like, okay, I have to put my private chef work on hold. I just don't have time for everything. So I kept on my writing and I worked there, but it was the one thing that I ended up curtailing, or at least that, you know, for the time being, was that. And then I left there to write my book. So then I was completely immersed in the writing, and I never ended up going back.
But I think also once the book has been published, I don't think you've stopped running.
No, I haven't. So, I mean, it's all been basically from when I signed the contract till now, I've been basically totally devoted to either the writing or the promotion. Or
promotion has you, meaning I know that we've had conversations and you'll be like, I'm on my way to Boca, or I'm just leaving wherever. Yeah, so what is that like?
A lot of traveling. And I happen to like that because I don't like the stress that comes with traveling. And I think post COVID, I get more stressed out from the travel. But what I really enjoy is meeting different people in different communities and seeing how they react and how they think about food and what their experiences are, and seeing the universal connection to food that sort of binds us all, and how it affects their families and the feedback I get. So that for me is very enjoyable. And there's a lot, I find it rewarding to meet people from different places and spaces. So that's been, you know, it's a lot of work, but it's also very rewarding. The cookbook writing itself was like a full year of just immersive. Like I was like a hermit. I did not see people very often. It was a lot of self-discipline. I can say that I definitely like gained book baby weight, I call it. Because, you know, like you're writing and you're testing food, and I wasn't as active while I was sitting on my tush writing the book for.
You're making up for it now.
Trying. But it basically was, I think, an exercise. Also, writing a book is a very humbling experience.
And if I say that about running a business,
if it's not, then maybe the writer is doing something wrong, because the amount of feedback you have to be open to and criticism, being able to objectively look at your own work, and especially with recipe creation, every day was like a different million decisions that I had to, micro decisions, I would say, that I had to decide about. And also, you know, objectively looking at a recipe and being like, okay, well, great, I've been working on this recipe for 3 months, and now objectively I'm like, nah, not good enough. Wow. You know, like that kind of thing. And having to take a step back from what you're working on and what you're tasting, and really be open to.
We used to say, when we first opened the bakery, I would say, Dave, listen, if your bread is good and it sells, that's great. We can buy groceries. And if your bread doesn't sell, so we'll eat toast. Like, that was really our way of focusing in on the business. I want to ask not about your favorite recipe, but what about your kids? Do your kids have a favorite recipe from the cookbook?
There are many, and they've tasted, I would say, probably almost everything in here. So they know my food quite well. Actually, the reason I mentioned the chef work was before was because of what you were saying. What you were saying about that balance of working in the food business and having and giving to your family. So one of their favorite things in the book is actually something that I created out of, you know, motherly guilt of working in the food business. And I was, you know, before holiday, all of my personal chef work was for clients that were, you know, ordering for holiday time. So it would become like, it would be before Sukkot or before Rosh Hashanah. And I'd have all of my menus for my family were dictated by what other people were ordering. And at a certain point, I started having this guilt of like, okay, great, like I'm making excellent food, but like, I want something special just for my family, right? And I ended up making this recipe up that I never offered to my clients. I only made it once a year because it's an expensive recipe. And I'm saying, like, I'm honest about that. Like, yeah. It's okay to say, this is Lekavod Yom Tov. This is special just for Rosh Hashanah. I make it once a year. And this glazed leg of lamb recipe was really as a result of me feeling that tug that I felt like, I just want something that I can say, this is special. You know, this is special for Yom Tov. This is special just for my family. And I think everybody has these like negotiations that they make, whether you're cooking a lot or a little. I know women who say, I don't cook during the week at all. I'm working and I cook for Shabbos. So that's when I can do it. And if that's your situation, then that's totally, totally fine, because at least they're saying that. But when I am going to cook, this is when I'm designating.
Yes, yeah, it'll matter.
It'll matter. And that's when I'm designating this special intention and this time and what I'm giving for my family. You know, and we're lucky because we do have Shabbos and we do have these.
Buttons. I really truly do believe that.
So, you know, but with that said, like there's a lot of opportunities for entertaining in the book. I mentioned this last section. I was going to show it to you. Everything in this last bonus chapter is all basically geared for those times that are different from your weekday cooking. It's the last chapter in the book. It's twice as big as all the other chapters. And it is essentially like a mini cookbook that is meant for either large quantity cooking or entertaining choices, meaning small bites, things that are appropriate to serve to a crowd, which is not the same as the choice you're going to make for Wednesday night supper when you're just making, you know, for four or yeah. six or eight people, right? So so that was actually something that I held on to from the original concept of the book. This was one of the original chapters. And when I redid the format of the book and was, you know, selling it to publishers, I was like, but this has to stay.
But you wrote the book and then shopped the book out, or you knew who was publishing?
No, what I did was, what's commonly done is to write a cookbook proposal. Cookbook proposal is really, if you do it right, it should be like a blueprint of your book.
Sure.
And so it should have, you should already be thinking about your table of contents. You should already be thinking about, you know, what recipes are going into the book, the look, the feel of the book. And in my case, a sample, you should have at least one sample chapter to give the publisher an understanding of what your vision of the book is going to be.
One of the things that's wonderful about this cookbook for me is I always talk about this idea of innovation and tradition. See what I'm saying? Like, we're so connected deeply to our Masorah, to our tradition, and we want to stay there, but we also want to innovate and create. I think a cookbook is one example, but I would like say it spans everything. It spans halacha. It spans our hashkafa. You want to stay, but you also want to move a little bit forward. And so what I like here is that it's focused in on Shabbos and Chag and on a Wednesday night and on how to entertain many people, but also everything here is stylized to the nth degree, meaning the pictures are unbelievable. QR codes that you scan to really see videos of what you're doing.
That's the teacher in me.
But even the play here of the way that you use color, the way that you use fonts, the way that you break down a page.
The other thing is that because I really wanted to give the readers everything, but, you know, people are not buying this to read it like a novel. They're buying it for a cookbook, right? So I had the challenge that I wanted to include a certain amount of content while also being aware that not everybody has the visual attention span to read large blocks of text. And I worked incredibly hard with the graphic designer to break up.
No, the pages, you know,
to break up text, basically, so that it was easier on the eye to read, because I didn't want people glossing over the good stuff.
You know how now they take Gemara and like, break it down.
Yeah, but the same way that like yeah. that it's color blocked or mm-hmm. that it's or that, you know, you have different text boxes just to break up larger sections, because I felt like it's in there and I don't want them glossing over it. Or maybe I'll stick it on, you know, one of the image pages, you know, that extra tidbit that I want to include. And so that was definitely something that I worked really hard on. And in terms of innovation, like the reason I turned to this was because you were making me think about it. Like, I'm not a huge lover of gefilte fish. I'm not really.
We won't take away your Jew card. You can keep it. Please, but yes.
Please don't tell my in-laws, because I think they sort of know that I like it, but like they have a 5-generation recipe of gefilte fish they make from scratch. It's
fascinating.
Like really important to them. They have a lot of emotional
fish pride.
A lot of emotional fish pride. And this is how, like, you know, their great grandmother did it.
Yeah.
And they will spend hours making homemade gefilte fish. Their gefilte fish is delicious, but I still am not a huge lover of gefilte fish. I don't hate it, but I don't necessarily feel like I want to spend 5 hours making it. And so, like, for me, I enjoy a fresh fish cake more. And it's not as...
Well, shout out. What is this called?
This is herb fish cakes with lemon horseradish sauce, but I also have, like, a salmon teriyaki version. There's lots of different iterations of how I actually do this at home. But it's basically pulsing fresh fish fillets and adding, you know, different seasonings, herbs, a binder like egg and breadcrumbs or that kind of thing. And then pan frying it, but not it's not deep fried, but, you know, shallow pan frying. You could also do it as like a fish burger, but I have like a section here basically on why I feel like this is today's gefilte fish.
Ah. I'm glad that you've nouveaued the us. Talk a bit about tomorrow. What are you going to be demoing tomorrow?
Well, you know, it's going to be every Rosh Chodesh, I do a Instagram live, which is sort of like a mini cooking class a little bit. I really like to interact with people on Instagram. So I like when, you know, I try to read all their comments and, you know, have some interaction. And it's a good way for me to be in touch with people who follow me. And I've been doing it for like already a few years, like maybe 3 years, every Rosh Chodesh we do it. And people know. And so because it's Rosh Chodesh Av, I wanted to do something for the 9 days. And that in and of itself is, I think, a challenge to a lot of people of what they need during the 9 days.
I have a friend who just told me that she writes a menu plan for the 9 days because she gets so nervous about it and the kids get so nervous about it.
For many people, I happen to be a big dairy person. I don't really feel like I'm missing out that much by not having meat, but I know so many people that are really, like, it throws off their entire system of cooking and they get very overwhelmed by it. And there's one recipe in here that I thought is helpful because it's very filling. People get nervous about things not being filling enough.
I'm just going to say, if in the background you hear panting, it's just that my dog walked in. Dove, could you grab him?
So we're going to be making these mushroom burgers because I like the idea of showing how filling a non-meat burger can be. The mushrooms are very satisfying and also sort of umami. So it's a very
sad. Meaning the picture, if you wouldn't have told me it was a mushroom burger, the picture aside from maybe the cheese on top of it would have given it away.
Then you get your cheeseburger. So it's like a double bonus to get your cheeseburger.
It's a fair trade.
Yeah. So I have a son who is a yeshiva bacher who, like most guys, just want their meat burger. And I know that this is a ringing endorsement when my son says to me, "Ooh, can you make those mushroom burgers?" So like, that's a very like,
you're in.
So I think I really want to show everyone how to do this because it's really not hard. And the other really nice thing about it is that, yes, it's a bunch of steps in terms of, you know, basically we're going to saute mushrooms and onions. That's really mostly the work of it. Once you have your mixture formed into patties, give it a brief little chill to let it set. And then just pan fry them and like into the burger they go. It's really not hard. The one thing I like to do at home though, is because it's still like a process of making the patties, is they freeze beautifully. So what I'll do is I will freeze the patties on a sheet pan and then I'll like just take one out, thaw it for a few minutes. And whenever I need a couple of burgers, they're ready to go. And that cuts down a lot on the work of it. So for me, like, I don't think that they're hard because half of the time they're already pre-made in my freezer, you know, they're already prepped. So that's the kind of thing that I like to do in general, especially for people that are having a hard time with meal prep, is, you know, either to batch cook or to, you know, to do the kind of things that you can break it down and do it in advance and freeze it halfway through process, you know, where it's, you know, most of the prep is done and you just have to finish it up. So these are good. That's a good option for something like this.
Okay. So tomorrow, Israel time at 5. So that's New York time at 10 in the morning. Took me a minute there. We're going to be doing an Instagram live straight from the Meshek. Do people usually sign up or they just know what's happening?
So we're going to post, I usually post the information on my Instagram feed, on my story, and some, and we can also do it as a post. And then basically people see, and then they just...
Okay, guys, you've been warned. Tomorrow, which is July 19th. Also, I assume that we're going to post this as a little bit of a podcast. So if you've missed, if you're listening to this past 5 p.m. on July 19th, don't be worried. I'm sure we'll convince Nomi to let us know where the recipe is available, or you can always watch the live. Thanks. Enjoy your trip to Israel. I'm really excited.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to being at the Meshek. I love seeing all the different fun things you do there. And yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
It is. Okay, great.